Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayan. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us first offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human beings, unto the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Bhagavatam and rendering service to the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is practically destroyed, and loving service unto the glorious Lord is established as an irrevocable fact. All right, thank you. Chapter 1, verse 14. Apana samsritim ghoram. Sorry, that's page 73, text 14. Yes. Apanat sangshritim ghoram yannama vivashogrinan tata sadyo vimuchyeta yad vibheti swayam bhayam apanat sangshritim ghoram yannama vivashogrinan tataksadyo vimuchyeta yad bibheti swayam bhayam apanak sangshritim ghoram yannama vivashogrinan tatak sadhyo vimucheta yad bibheti swayam bhayam. Please chant. Apana sang shudim ghoram yannama vivashogrinam tatak sadhyo vimucheta yad vibheti swayam bhayam apana samsritim ghoram yannama vivashogrinan tata sadyo vimucheta yad vibheti swayam. Apana samshritim goram nama vivashogrinan tatak sadyo vimucheta yad vibheti swayam bhayam apana samshritim goram. Tatak sadyo vimucheta yad bibheti swayam bhayam. Anyone else? Apanam. being entangled, sangshatim, in the hurdle of birth and death, koram, too complicated, yat, what, nama, the absolute name, vivashaha, unconsciously, grinan, chanting, tataha, from that, sadya, at once, vimuchyeta, gets freedom, yat, that which, bibheti, fears, swayam, personally, bhayam, fear itself. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. Please repeat. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified.
Perfect.
Vasudev.
O Lord Krishna, the absolute, or Lord Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, is the supreme controller of everything. There is no one in creation who is not afraid of the rage of the Almighty. Great asuras like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others who were very powerful living entities were all killed by the personality of Godhead. And the Almighty Vasudev has empowered his name with the powers of his personal self. Everything is related to him, and everything has its identity in him. It is stated herein that the name of Krishna is feared even by fear personified. This indicates that the name of Krishna is no different from Krishna. Therefore, the name of Krishna is as powerful as Lord Krishna himself. There's no difference at all. Anyone, therefore, can take advantage of this, of the holy names of Lord Sri Krishna, even in the midst of greatest dangers. The transcendental name of Krishna, even though uttered unconsciously or by force of circumstances, can help one obtain freedom from the hurdle of birth and death.
Yad bibheti svayam bhayam. Fear personified is afraid of Krishna's name. So let's take a moment and just evaluate this purport, or analyze this purport, or at least the first part. It's always fun to do this because almost every sentence Prabhupada writes in his purports, not everyone, but almost everyone, has a reference behind it, a Shastric reference. So let's take that first sentence. Vasudeva, or Lord Krishna, the absolute personality, is the supreme controller of everything. Can anyone think of a verse that says that? Vasudevam Sarvamiti, right from the Bhagavad Gita, right. There is no one in creation who is not afraid of the rage of the Almighty. Does that remind you of anything in the Shastra? How about from the Bhagavad Gita? How about the 11th canto? I mean, the 11th chapter, where the universal form is chewing up everyone in creation. Ah, they're all rushing into his mouth. And Arjuna, seeing this, and is terrified. And so everybody's afraid of death. And Krishna says, Mrityu sarva charas chaham. I am death, all devouring deaths. Okay? Great asuras like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others, who were very powerful living entities, were all killed by the personality of God. So these are just references, of course, from the Bhagavatam and Ramayana. In this regard, Prabhupada writes about the tiny Hiranyakashipus of the modern age. That more or less, in those days, there was just one Ravana or one Hiranyakashipu, but today he said more or less everybody is a tiny replica. So, anyone know the meaning of Hiranyakashipu? Clayton? Yes. Yes. This. Yes, and pleasures. This is, yes, Hiranyakashipu is two interests. Let's see. And the Almighty Vasudeva has empowered his name with the powers of his personal self. Remind you of anything? Yes, in Shikshastika? Second verse. Yes. Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. Yes, he has put all of his potencies in the holy name. So in this way you see, Prabhupada's purports are just like this. They're packed up, one reference after the next, after the next. And this is why they have this unparalleled effect on the hearts of the listener. So here the topic is fear. And people are afraid of many, many things. You know, we're afraid of not being accepted in our social circle. We're afraid of not having enough money to support ourselves at the end of our lives. We're afraid of getting bad grades in school. Right? We're afraid of getting physically injured. We are afraid of losing the football game. What are some other things that people are afraid of? Afraid of losing someone they love. Yes, very prominent fear in people's lives. Very good. Yes? Afraid of death. Yes, everybody is. That's like unmentionable. Uh-huh. Yes. Whoa, I'd rather die than give a class. Okay, others? Amrita? Fear of not being loved. Yes, I was. Just yesterday, I got an email from an old friend. He's a nice gentleman. He's a little eccentric, but very good hearted, and he likes Krishna consciousness. So he had a campaign to promote care for the homeless, and he went around America on a pogo stick. Pogoman.com, if you want to see. You know what a pogo stick is? It's one of those things that bounces. You put your feet on it and it bounces. And it was a suitably corny website, but what was very interesting is he had profiles of the homeless, dozens of people. He had pictures and then a little story, their story, how they became homeless. Amazing stories. Many, many of them said, I never expected this would happen to me. I was, all of a sudden, I lost my job, and I got in an accident, and my insurance didn't cover it, and I couldn't pay the mortgage, and so all of a sudden, I was out on the street. He said, 80% of people who are homeless now are not homeless within a year. They're just temporarily, circumstantially homeless. So, you know, that's certainly something people are afraid of. If I don't have enough money, how am I going to live? You've been through it. Yeah, so many things to be afraid of. But what was the one thing that Srila Prabhupada complained, especially about the Westerners, that we're not afraid of? Maya. Yeah, he said, this is the disease of the Westerners. You're not afraid of Maya. And some Easterners also. So when I was going to church as a young boy, I was taught to be afraid of God. It's considered to be, this is a good thing, to be a God-fearing person, a God-fearing nation. And I was also taught to love the things of the world by inference and example. So when I came to Krishna consciousness, I learned to be afraid of the things of the world and to love God. This is indicative of religion and the mode of ignorance, right? What appears to be religious is actually irreligious, and what appears to be irreligious is actually religious. So, yes, we are not we're afraid of so many things, but we're not afraid of this one thing, which is mentioned in the last sentence of the purport. Can help one attain freedom from the hurdle of birth and death. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that a little advancement on the path of devotional service can save one from what? Yes, the greatest type of fear. What is the Sanskrit for that? Very good. Oh, well, okay. Mahate. Mahato bhayat. Yes. Mahato bhayat. The greatest fear. And that's another thing that people aren't afraid of. See, once Srila Prabhupada was giving a class about the soul and about reincarnation, and some hippie in the audience asked him, what's wrong with coming back as a dog? To which Prabhupada replied, you have my blessings. So we're not afraid of the reactions of that means nothing. It's just a philosophy. It's just like a religious belief. People are controlled by religious leaders through threats of hell. If you don't behave, then you'll go to hell. You're going to suffer in the future. Prabhupada told this story about the Christian preacher in Newcastle, England, where they have coal mines. So he was preaching to the coal miners. And he said, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, then you will go to hell. And he said, oh, what is hell like? Oh, hell is very dark, and it's very cold. And they said, well, but we go there every day. So the preacher said, well, there are no newspapers in hell. Oh, no newspapers. Terrible, terrible. In this way, he scared the hell out of them. So in Krishna consciousness, we know about this fear, but we don't depend on it. It is something to be cognizant of. But you can't truly be motivated out of fear. You can be a little motivated out of fear, but not deeply. What is the more powerful motivation? Love. Love will empower us. Why is that? Who can think of a verse which indicates how every soul is seeking happiness? Remember this verse? Ananda Maya Vyasa. Everyone is seeking pleasure. So the motivation to get pleasure is far stronger than the motivation to avoid pain. The motivation to avoid pain is more like an annoyance. And at certain times it becomes very prominent. But it's not the enduring and lasting motivation. I used to work in fundraising. And we learned that there are two kinds of money. Happy money and sad money. So sad money is given for a bunch of negative reasons. Out of fear. Like if organizations send a letter, oh, we're going to go out, we're going to go under if you don't send money right now. Okay, so all right, I want them to stay around, so I'll send them a check. This is called sad money. Not really want to do it, but I have to do it because I'm afraid of the consequences of not doing it. If you don't give now, these people will die. And then the other part, and you'll feel so guilty. Okay, so out of guilt, out of fear, one would give it. But the quality of sad money is it doesn't repeat itself. See? So it's not considered a good reason or a good way to present a fundraising cause. Happy money, on the other hand, makes people feel good. So out of pleasure, they'll give. See? If you give now, then these people will get these benefits and they will be their lives will be improved, or this building will go up, or this thing will happen, and you will be part of it, and you will forever be able to take pride in this accomplishment. You know, this is happy money. So, similarly, true spirituality cannot be motivated by fear. It can only be motivated by love. nonetheless, there is this fearsome component in material existence. Prabhupada was in London, and the reporter asked, "Do you have a concept of hell in your religion?" He said, "Yes, London is hell." So that was very profound because, of course, London ruled India for most of Prabhupada's life. So for him to go to London and say, "Yes, London is hell," it got their attention. And then he said very diplomatically, "Of course, it is a great credit to the English people that they have established such a great civilization in such a hellish climate." So, our concept of hell is Gainesville. You know, or anywhere we may happen to be. And it's not really a concept of hell, it is hell. It's just covered by this veneer that makes it look groovy, you know. It's hell. Everybody is fighting for survival. Are they going to rushing to work at the university because they love it? They can't wait to get the class, to attend the class, to teach the class. You know, they can't wait to get into to their cubicle to enter the latest data. They come in early just to get the freshest printouts. I mean, is there love behind it? No, it's the animal propensity called bhayam, which means fearing or defending. I've got to protect myself. I've got to have enough money. Money is the coin of the realm by which one exercises this propensity of fearing. So fear is driving everything. Even if you go out for a walk in the woods, you want to get away from the city and all the passion. So what do you see in the woods? It's tranquil and it's beautiful. And then you see the creeper is growing up the tree and strangling it, you know. And this tree is pushing up taller so it can completely get the sun and block out all other trees below. It's just this intense struggle for existence and survival. That's what's really happening, isn't it? But the veneer is, oh, it's so pleasant, it's so nice. So this is what fear is. This is why fear is our friend if it's properly applied. So Prabhupada writes here that these great demons were killed by Krishna, and therefore everyone is afraid of Krishna. And Krishna has invested all of his power in his holy name. Therefore, the logical conclusion is that everyone is afraid of Krishna's holy name. Every that is a negative influence, feared by fear personified. The emblem of fear is afraid of Krishna's name. What pastime does that remind you of from Srimad Bhagavatam? What was there an incident where the most fearsome living creatures were there and Krishna's holy name drove them away? Yamadutas and who? Ajamil, yes. So Ajamil was raised as a very devout Brahmin, but he became degraded by bad association and lived a terribly degraded life. Just horribly degraded life. So he was siring children at the very end of his life, in his 80s. He had a young son. And he was very fond of his son, whom he named Narayan. So when he was dying, the Yamadutas were licking their chops. These agents of death, the Yamadutas, who looked like something like the Planet of the Apes. You know, these hairy, fearsome beasts who are about to snatch his soul out of his body. And this is what he sees. This is why most people empty their bowels and their bladders when they die. Because it's a frightening experience. Did you know that? It's so they're just so scared. It literally scares it out of them. So Ajamil did this, but just then the agents of Lord Vishnu came and stopped him. Wait a minute. And they said, "Wait a minute. We know this guy's record. He's terrible. He lived by cheating others. He exploited Everyone, he was degraded in every respect. Everybody hated him. We've got his record right here. What are you interfering? No one has ever done this before. And the agents of Vishnu said, no, the name of Krishna is so powerful that it will that he is now delivered of all those sinful activities, and you can't take him. And they actually had a very civil discussion, although they looked like beasts. They spoke very philosophically, and they had this very interesting discussion between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, is there in this next sixth canto. So this is one example of how the most frightening things can be driven away by the power of the holy name. Because Krishna is non-different from his name. Try to consider, what does that mean? Once a disciple was speaking, and he said that Krishna is present in his holy name. Sometimes Prabhupada would call on his disciples to give lectures in his presence. And that was very intimidating for them to do. So on one occasion, the devotee said, so Krishna is present in his holy name. And Prabhupada asked him, oh, where in his holy name is Krishna? It's like Krishna is over here, but he comes in the holy name, but he's... And Prabhupada explained, no, there is no difference between Krishna and his holy name. Nama Chintamani Krishna, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. There is no difference. The name of Krishna is the same as Krishna. There is an absolute connection there. Therefore, the name is as frightening as Krishna. So this is the logic in Prabhupada's purport. In his form as death, Krishna is very frightening. Everybody's scared of him. And the name is non-different from Krishna. Therefore, the name is feared by fear personified. It's not like Voldemort, he who must not be named. His name was so frightening that no one dare even say it. Amongst the asuras, Krishna's name is not welcome. Like there were some Mohammedan guards who were sent by the Qazi to stop the Harinam that was inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya. So they went to the devotees and they broke the madangas and they ordered them to stop in the name of the Qazi. And then when they came back, they were chanting. And the Qazi said, what are you doing? And they said, why don't we can't stop? We just heard him saying Krishna. And we told him, don't chant Krishna. And now we can't stop saying Krishna, Krishna. So this is why the holy name is not welcome in certain circles for this reason. It's so powerful. But it is powerful even if said unconsciously. This should be good news for some of us in japa class. Even if said unconsciously or by circumstance, the holy name of Krishna is that powerful that anything that we might be afraid of cannot remain. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it said, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakar. Krishna is like Surya. What is Surya? The sun. Maya Haya Andhakar. What is Andha? Darkness. Right. So, wherever there is the sun, there cannot be darkness. One drop of light drives away all the darkness of the universe. So, in the same way, the holy name of Krishna, whatever we may be afraid of, whatever darkness may be in our hearts, whatever problems are in our lives, they can't stand before the presence of the holy name of Krishna. This is what this verse is telling us. There is, in other words, nothing to be afraid of if the name of Krishna is on our lips. There's just nothing bigger than Krishna. You know, we are like the little child holding his father's hand while crossing the street. There's so much danger. Especially if you go to India, and you see, isn't it? You see the entire family is riding on the motorcycle. Mom, dad, junior, sister, grandma. Am I exaggerating? They're all riding on the motorcycle. And maybe, you know, the infant is just like hanging on under somebody's arm. And it's just as calm as can be, no anxiety. Right? This is the, as bad as things may look in our lives at any given time, this is the mood of a devotee. What do I have to worry about? I'm chanting the name of Krishna. What's the worst that can happen to me right now? There's a book by Dale Carnegie called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And this is one of his exercises. Just extrapolate. Okay, what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen in the situation that I'm in. So when you think it through, it's, well, actually, okay, even if the worst thing happened, I could handle it. Right? So chanting gives you that ability in great quantity. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, I have to leave this body, but I'm chanting holy names, so I'll be protected. This is Lord Chaitanya's promise. Okay. So there's a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur called Harinam Chintamani. And in many of his 100 books, Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses this approach. He makes a fictionalized conversation, if you will, between two personalities in which he embodies and encapsulates the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So in the Harinam Chintamani, Lord Chaitanya comes to Haridas Thakur. So Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family. In India at that time, the caste Brahmanism was so strong that if you even ate food from a Mohammedan's house, then you were condemned and could never be accepted again as a Brahmin. There's a story of a Brahmin who was starving, he was so hungry, he was on a journey, and there was no houses anywhere. Finally, there was one house. It was a Mohammedan's house. He said, oh, I've got to go. If I don't eat, I'm going to die. So he went to the house and he begged something. The Mohammedan said, you want to eat at my house? So I have to eat something. Well, okay, here. I don't have much, but here, you can take. So he gave him a little food, and the Brahmin ate it. He said, please, give me more. He said, well, that's all I have. So then he said, I lost my caste, and I'm still hungry. So this is a little aphorism for, like, you know, Maya. If you do something which you know you shouldn't do, and it doesn't satisfy you, then you can remember this quote, I lost my caste and still I'm hungry. But the point is that the Brahmins, to be associated in any way with a Mohammedan was just like the worst punishment. And because the Mohammedans had political power, they would sprinkle water on the heads of the Brahmins. And then by force they were converted. See? If you even were touched by a Mohammedan in that way, then you were forced. Then you could no longer be a Brahmin. Now you had to be a Muslim. There was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya who, his name escapes me at the moment. I want to say Hiranyagarbha or something. In any case, he was so, yes, the ruler, the Mohammedan ruler, was one day undressing. And his wife noticed on his back there were scars. And she said, well, what are these scars? He said, oh, this was when I was whipped. When I was a young man, I was punished by my master. Who has done this to you? You are the ruler. Oh, his name was such and such. And this is this devotee. And the Mohammedan said, yes, but I was very bad. I deserved it. So I don't have any grudge against him. And the wife said, well, I cannot tolerate this. You must punish him. You should kill him. He said, no, he was very good to me other than this. He said, all right, well, then you must convert him. And he said, all right. So he went and sprinkled water on this devotee's head. And the devotee was mortified. Now I can no longer... Oh, no, I'm a Muslim. What shall I do? I'm a Mohammedan. So he went to some caste Brahmins. What can I do to recover my position? And they said, oh, there is only one cure. You must drink boiling ghee. And of course, what happens if you drink boiling ghee? Yeah, you'll die. So it's basically a medical way to commit suicide. This was their prescription. And so then he went to the other devotees, and they said, no, you just chant the holy name of Krishna, because that can vanquish more sins than you can commit. So imagine, Haridas Thakur was born a Mohammedan. You can imagine how the Brahmins felt about this person becoming a great devotee. He was the Nam Acharya, which means the exemplary chanter, and he would chant all day, every day. What's it, 192 rounds a day? 22 hours of chanting. And in the other 2 hours, he would do everything else he had to do. So it not only disturbed the caste Brahmins to see a Mohammedan becoming so devoted, but of course it disturbed the Mohammedans, because one of their own had become a quote-unquote Hindu. So the Qazi, the local Qazi, the ruler, said, we have to do something about this Haridas Thakur. So he found the most beautiful prostitute in the district. And she said, he explained the situation. She said, don't worry, I will take care of everything. So Haridas Thakur was sitting in his bhajan kutir, chanting. And he would chant there. His routine was to chant all day and all night in this spot. So the prostitute came near him in the night, and as the Shastra says, began exhibiting bodily poses that would agitate the mind of Lord Brahma. I can't explain any more than that. I'm sorry. I can't.
Yes.
Yes, he was. But he was chanting. Lord Brahma was in this very powerful position, but Haridas Thakur was chanting in a very humble position. So in that sense, he was even greater than Lord Brahma, according to this reference. Yes, that's what it says. Okay, he was not at all distracted by this, and he sat and chanted. So the prostitute just sat and waited, figuring, okay, he'll be finished. And after many hours of chanting, the dawn came, and so Haridas said to the prostitute, you have come to enjoy with me? And she said, yes. And he said, I'm sorry, I made a vow that I have to finish so many rounds, so please forgive me. You come back tonight, and I will certainly fulfill your desire. So the prostitute went back. The Qazi said, what happened? She said, don't worry, just give me one more night. So again, she returned the next night, and he was chanting into the night. She was sitting, and she was hearing him chant, and she began to feel, I'm so fallen. And then again the dawn came, and he apologized once again. And he said, please, just come back tonight. I promise you I will fulfill all your desires tonight. So again, she reported to the Qazi. And that night when she returned and she was hearing him chant, she also began chanting. And then after chanting for some time, she fell at his feet and said, the Qazi has sent me to you. Please forgive me. And he said, I know that. But the holy name of Krishna is so powerful that you will be freed now of all of your past sins. So whatever you've done is gone. You please just stay here and chant. And she became his disciple. She shaved her head. She stayed in that spot. And the next morning when the sunrise came, Haridas was gone and she was sitting there chanting. So all the people of the village were amazed. Who is this? How is this possible? This person who was so fallen is now this constantly chanting. How is it possible? And even the Qazi was amazed. Everyone was was inspired by Haridas Thakur, just the opposite of what he wanted to happen. So this is the greatness of Haridas Thakur. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to Jagannath Puri, he would go in the temple before Lord Jagannath and pay his obeisances every day. First thing, he would come to see the Lord. But Haridas Thakur would not enter the temple because Mohammedans were not allowed to enter the temple. Just as even today, anyone who's not only Western, but who is Indian, but affiliated with ISKCON, they're not allowed to enter the temple. Yeah, don't wear your neck beads if you go. But Haridas Thakur had a very humble attitude that he did not feel fit to enter the temple. So he stayed in a place nearby called Siddha Bakul. And there's a tree there which you can see even today. That's a very gnarled tree covered with little slips of paper tied to it with people's prayers. And it used to be, it's close to the temple, and it used to be very easy to see the temple spire from that spot, even when I went there in the 70s. But now it's all built up, so you can't see it anymore. But there's a beautiful shrine there, and Haridas's samadhi is... No, not samadhi, it's Bhajan Kutir is there. So after seeing Lord Jagannath, every day Lord Chaitanya would come to see Haridas Thakur, because Haridas would not go to the temple, see. So this is how great a devotee he was. So the Harinam Chintamani is about a conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Haridas Thakur. So Lord Chaitanya comes to Haridas Thakur and asks him, how can the living entities be delivered even though they don't want to be delivered? And Haridas Thakur explained that the processes of hearing from saintly persons and acquiring spiritual knowledge that way, or working selflessly in devotion to God, are no longer adequate to allow one to enter the shrine of bhakti. These processes used to be practically the means for self-realization. But he said, in this age, it's so fallen that even if you do these things, it's not adequate. What to speak of deity worship, which was a process from an earlier age, there's no way that one can become liberated just by worshiping the deity in Kali Yuga. All of these things, he said, have become inadequate due to the influence of this age. Only the holy name can take one to the realm of bhakti. So everything depends upon the holy name, he said. He explained this to Lord Chaitanya. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is omniscient and knew everything, but on many occasions he would have these kind of questions, asking his devotees. So Haridas Thakur then explains that any object has four qualities. You know what they are? Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Lila. That is, name, form, Guna is qualities, and Lila, activities, function at least. So, you know, this is the pastime of the table, holding the book. This is the activity. So, he points out that Brahman has none of these things. Therefore, it is not even an object. But of these four things, the first is nama, that the name comes before all others. So, these are four ways to remember Krishna. Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Lila. Remembering Krishna's name, his form, his qualities, and his pastimes. These are four ways to think of Krishna. So Haridas Thakur explains that all of these are wonderful, but the basis of them all is the name of Krishna. This is why if people chant, they can make incredible advancement, even if they don't know much. On the other hand, people may know everything about Krishna consciousness, but if they don't chant, then they can't follow the regulative principles. See? So it's knowledge alone is not adequate. Even work alone is not adequate. In the Gita, Krishna is very ecumenical. He says, best thing is to always think of me with love, but if you can't do that, then work for me. And if you can't do that, then... I'm sorry, if you can't do that, then what? What is the next step? Follow the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga, yes. Which means Nam Kirtan. And if you can't do that, then work for me. And if you can't do that, then work for charity of some kind. Be detached in some way. So, the point is that the Nam is the basis of everything, and thus it is feared by fear personified. There is no danger in our lives that is too great to encompass the power of the holy name. Therefore, it's a very simple conclusion. All we have to do is keep the name of Krishna on our lips. Somehow or other chant. In India, the prescription was 64 rounds a day. That was minimum. If you didn't do that, you were fallen. So we don't have the ability to do that. But that 16-round limit that Prabhupada set for initiation, that we must do. And that will protect us, just like a vaccination protects us from a disease. You know, a vaccination is a small case of the disease that builds up your antibodies. And once you have it, then you won't catch the disease. So even if it's not a lot of chanting by comparison to others, even that prescribed amount of chanting every day will always protect us from Maya. If you're visiting your relatives and you just chant your rounds, and the rest of the day is all TV and Maya and mundane conversations, and nobody wants to talk about Krishna's form, activities, or pastimes, you know, you'll be protected because you're inoculated with the holy name. So this is why the sages happen to bring this up. They're asking questions, but they just make this emphatic statement at the end of their, or in the midst of their questions to Suta Goswami. Any questions from any of the assembled sages?
I'm speaking on the concept of fear, and I'm wondering, what about in one's service, if we find that... although it's devotional service, sometimes we do it out of fear of displeasing senior devotees and not out of love. And although we'd like it to be out of love, sometimes we're so overburdened with so much service and a lot of people asking things of us that sometimes we just do it out of fear of displeasing the devotees. And I notice a huge difference in the quality of, you know, the internal quality of the service. So if maybe you could speak on that and how to transform that. Maybe it's just...
That's a very good question. How can we serve out of love and not out of fear? And that fear can take other forms also, like I'm going to be kicked out, I'll lose my place to live, I won't get my meals, my prasadam. It's inevitable that we'll have a variety of motivations for devotional service. Okay? It's not within us as human beings to be on the platform of spontaneous love, constant, incessant love from the beginning. You know, unless one is truly exceptional. Okay? So, if we have those mixed motives, we should ask. We should present them to the people we are afraid of. We should do the Dale Carnegie thing and say, okay, what is the worst that can happen? What is it that I'm actually afraid of? So in your case, what are you afraid would happen if you were to displease these senior devotees?